Welcome to Blog Open Talk Minds
Radio
with Alejandro Rojas. Open Minds Radio is your UFO news authority, presenting evidence and the latest news regarding the UFO phenomenon. Here's your host, Alejandro Rojas.
Hello, and welcome to Open Minds Radio. This is your host, Alejandro Rojas. We have a terrific show today because that gentleman you just heard, Robert Dean, is actually our guest for this evening, and we actually pre-recorded it. So we will be playing that in a little while, and that was just done very recently. Mr. Dean is getting up there in years, and so it gets difficult for him to get in and out all of here and there. And so we made it a little easier for him and brought him during the day and went upstairs in the sunshine and recorded the video. So we'll be talking to him. Who is Robert Dean, you may be asking? Well, he was a master sergeant when he was working for NATO. And while he was working for NATO, he was given to read, essentially, he'll tell you all about it, this document called the assessment, where NATO had done a UFO assessment to check out if, what was going on with UFOs and if there was something visiting us, if they were aggressive or not. So that's what he'll be talking about coming up here. We'll ask him, his history, how he got to NATO, when he started investigating UFOs, and then the aftermath, because the aftermath of him coming out and talking about everything is really interesting also. He had a lot of problems, unfortunately. So that is coming up soon, my friends. A couple of things. I do want to say thank you to Karen Dolan through the keyhole. She had me on Friday to talk about the conference, and she's always a lot of fun. And then Dee Andrews had us on Eye to the Sky. Both of these are part of the Paranormal Radio Network ran by Joe Montaldo. And both of these hosts, including Joe Montaldo himself, will all be at the UFO Congress coming up here in February, the 23rd to the 27th. And Joe, I think, is even doing a live broadcast. Everybody else is probably doing some interviews and hanging out and seeing our plethora of fabulous speakers that are going to be there. So that's going to be a lot of fun. We're very excited about that. We just had, fortunate enough, to have Travis Walton come and visit us a little while ago, and he is very excited, so excited. There were several times where I heard him giggling like a schoolgirl. He was so excited. I don't know if anybody else heard that, but we'll ask Jason if he heard that when he comes on the line in a little bit here. So we're very excited about all of that coming up here. Otherwise, website stuff, I'll tell you some more about the stories we've posted lately, because even though we're swamped with conference stuff, we still have time to get wonderful web stories up and update our UFO daily news, which, of course, are headlines from around the world, and we have our good buddy Jason McClellan here to tell us more about those headlines.
I am here.
Hello.
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 Hello. This is your Open Minds news brief for Monday, February 7th, 2011. NASA's Kepler telescope continues to discover previously unknown planets through our galaxy. Despite having been hunting for only a year, the Kepler telescope has discovered 1,235 possible planets outside our solar system. These latest numbers were announced by NASA on February 2nd. And while all of these discovered celestial bodies have yet to be confirmed as planets, Kepler chief scientist William Borucki estimates that 80% of them will eventually be verified. Even more significant is the announcement that 54 of these newly discovered celestial bodies are likely within the habitable zone of their host stars, the zone that could be hospitable to life. According to Borucki, 5 of the planetary candidates are both near Earth-sized and orbit in the habitable zone of their planet stars. Follow-up observations will take place to confirm the preliminary results from Kepler, but these will occur over a period of several years.
Mm-hmm. 54, and guess what? Surprise, surprise, it was a surprise. They were surprised by this large number of planets in the Goldilocks zone, like they call it. Just like astronomers are surprised when they wake up in the morning or when they turn the corner about everything they discover all the time because they're scratching their heads. It wasn't supposed to. We didn't think that was going to be the case. But yet so many of them seem to have all the answers.
But you know what? With all of these astronomers and astrophysicists.
Don't
and,
apologize for these people.
No, what I'm saying is that nobody seems to ever agree on anything.
Yeah. Oh, that's very true in astronomy.
You know, and with this recent announcement of these planets that are possibly in the habitable zone, they kept saying that they're the first ones ever discovered.
Right.
Totally ignoring the Gliese.
Mm-hmm.
Both the 581G and 581D, I believe, that are supposedly in the habitable zone of Gliese 581.
Right. So the information's all over the place.
I think NASA likes to they've got sort of a complex going because they don't like to acknowledge any findings from anyone else. And then when they do
That's
it, they say
it's
the
true.
First thing.
Oh, yeah. That happens with NASA a lot. In fact, because it reminds me of a running bet that I had with my stepdad that about water on Mars. You know, the European Space Agency had said they found water on Mars, and I told him before that. You know, I had even heard it from one of the guys who works for JPL because I went to one of his talks. And actually early on, funny enough, he was saying that because of the sand is so fine, that it definitely to him was evidence that there was a water in abundance on Mars and probably still some there. So, you know, we had this bet, and he would not take the ESA because NASA would not confirm the European Space Agency. It's like they ignore them when they've been talking to them. And then a year or so later when they say, oh, we've discovered that there's water on Mars, you know, it's like it's this big revelation when the European Space Agency had been saying that for over a year. So it's frustrating that NASA does that.
Well, and look at their recent major press conference they had about the bacteria from the lake in California that could live and thrive in an arsenic environment.
Right.
Their specific wording on that stated that it was the first time that such a bacteria had been discovered that could thrive and reproduce in an arsenic environment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not true because I believe it was a year before that. There was a similar bacteria found in a different lake in California that was able to thrive and reproduce in an arsenic-heavy lake. It was different because it didn't actually modify its DNA, but it was able to thrive and reproduce in an arsenic environment. Mm-hmm. And NASA was claiming the first discovery of that.
Yeah, and now there's even debate, something about the basis based on arsenic, but that's debated whether that's the case. And, you know, I say this all the time, but, yeah, dark matter is one, for instance, that is thrown around as an assumed thing when it's still debated whether or not dark matter exists. There's still some scientists who debate that gravity is a push rather than a pull, meaning that instead of the Earth's mass pulling, let's say, the proverbial apple from the tree to the ground, that instead there's some sort of force that's pushing from space the apple to the ground.
Look, I think it doesn't matter whether you're an astronomer or a ufologist. You're not going to agree with everyone.
Yeah. Well,
there are always going to be those conflicts.
Luckily, these sort of conflicts don't often turn into large, violent things where we hurt each other.
That's rare. It happens sometimes here.
Yep.
Watch out. The Canadian reported last week that Chinese scientists believe aliens currently walk among humans. One of these alleged believers is Sun Shili, a retired foreign ministry official and current president of the Beijing UFO Research Society. The newspaper also mentioned Shen Sichuan, a rocket scientist, president of Beijing Aerospace University, and honorary director of the China UFO Research Association, who says all these phenomena are worth researching. Izvestia, a daily Russian newspaper, reports that there are a record number of UFO scientific and community-based organizations in China. The actions of these organizations are reportedly protected by the National Society of the Extraterrestrial Studies, which is financed by the Chinese government. According to the Canadian, Only professional scientists and engineers are allowed to be members in the society. A person is also required to have a PhD in science and have several published works about UFOs. About a third of all members of this society are also members of the government of China. This is yet another example of a government acknowledging the reality of the UFO phenomenon.
Well, and being open to it, I think. Because one thing with the Chinese, we wrote about this in Sun Shi Li, how they were very close during the early years of the Cultural Revolution and Chinese communism starting. But Sun Shi Li's wife worked for the government, and they went to her boss and said, "We're going to start a UFO magazine, a journal. We have a lot of scientists I've been working with." And the guy was so excited about it, he said, "Well, let us fund it." And the government funded it and their organization. But according to back then, the government stopped its funding once they were able to fund themselves. But still, a lot of the scientists, of course, in China work for the government. So they were really helpful. And it would be interesting to actually get more information from Sun Shi Li on the details of how that all works and how open the Chinese government is to all of this stuff. Because I know they helped out at the beginning, and they seem to be allowing it, you know, and even helping. But I've never heard of, like, government military coming out about, you know, UFO chases or something like that.
Yeah, it'd be great to hear more from him. And it's really... I think it's great. Just in the past year, we've heard so much more coming out of Asia as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've been talking a lot about Korea lately, and China was a major topic through last year and into this year as well.
And then China's starting to talk about their stealth planes.
Yeah.
So people are wondering, where did they get that technology? Did they steal it? Was it espionage? Did they, have their own James Bond? Maybe Sun Shi Li, some sort of spy, and they got the information out of America? Or do they have their own UFO crashes in China? That's what I'd like to know.
The person who probably has that answer is our own Michael Schrett.
Could you go get him? Did he go home already?
I think he's gone.
I don't think he does.
Well, I'm putting him on the spot.
We'll ask him tomorrow and tell the people on the air.
I think he'll probably have something to say about the topic.
Yeah, we'll see what he's got to say.
On to a UFO video. A UFO was spotted last week above Cheltenham, England. Witnesses described a silent object that changed color from blue to yellow to red. Trying to get a better view, witnesses drove to the highest point in the area, where they allegedly saw more than 100 of these objects in the sky that were all a variety of colors, and some moving differently or just disappearing. A video of the initial UFO sighting was posted to YouTube. Did you see this video?
Which one, then?
This was a video of just sort of, it looked like one object. First, there seemed to be two, and then there was this one that was a larger, sort of weird mechanical-looking thing.
Hmm.
And the camera didn't really focus on it.
I think I did it, kind of a glob, and yeah, like it reminded me of the turkey one.
Exactly.
One. Okay,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I did see that.
Yeah, and many people have been critical of the video so far, mm-hmm. saying it looks like a reflection in the window or
yeah.
something like that. But, you know, it's incredible that these people claim that they went up on a hill and saw 100 of these things.
Mm. I did see that, yeah.
But there's no video of that.
Mm-hmm. It's a tough one. Of course, you have your anecdotal and then you have some video backup, but a video doesn't necessarily capture the most spectacular claims that they have. So,
correct.
What can you do?
Correct. Here's something kind of fun. A European skiing website called Planet Ski posted some incredible pictures of snow circles. They're basically crop circles, but in the snow. The photos were taken in France, and apparently the intricate patterns appear there, and they've appeared there for the past 6 years. Planet Ski makes the claim that the designs are man-made, though, and not some form of extraterrestrial communication. They credit a British man who is a keen snowshoe walker, and it is apparently a hobby of his to make these designs. He is reportedly a retired cartographer whose designs are inspired by geometry and the stars.
They're really cool designs. I mean, if you go to our website and look at the link, they're huge. I mean, they're across these huge expanses of snow. I mean, it must take this guy forever, and they're very intricate designs, like these patterns that are in kind of quadrants that change their orientation, and very detailed. The guy's got to be very careful at what he does.
He apparently just walks around with a compass and does these things.
And they haven't caught him. I mean, they allegedly they've been told that it's some guy who does this, and they haven't talked to him yet.
Right. But these things look really cool.
Yeah,
and
cool.
Apparently they appear after many, many days of calm weather. Mm. And that makes sense because he's not going to be out there in a snowstorm and do it. And if he did it during a snowstorm, it would erase his hard work.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like it would take him a long time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Just out there walking around in his snowshoes.
Yeah, they are very cool. But I think it's important to post these kind of stories too, just in case. Because watch, it's inevitable or it happens that in a year from now, the pictures will resurface as crop circles in the snow and people saw UFOs making them and stuff like that. When in this case, you'll know, oh, no, Open Minds covered that a year ago. That's that crazy guy.
Keeping people informed.
Yep.
In a somewhat related story, other strange patterns in the snow appeared in Gloucestershire, England, in December. A woman walking her dog noticed the strange labyrinth of ring marks in the snow, and she snapped a photo of the interesting pattern. Local experts were called in to determine the cause of the strange phenomenon, but none were successful. Now, this picture was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Just looks like sort of a wooded area, lots of trees,
and
there are these rings in the snow just through the whole area.
It's a cool picture. It's very zen. It looks like one of those zen gardens.
It does.
Where each of the trees is creating ripples in water because the circles are around like the trees and stuff at like water ripples.
That's a great description.
It's very cool. Really cool picture.
Yeah.
And you would think, how would someone make those without, you know, being obvious about it? That's really weird. Unless there's some kind of strange thermal thing going on in the ground. I don't know.
Yeah, because the spacing between these rings is very narrow.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, you know, in a crop circle where you've got the tractor lines or any of these other areas, if someone had gone in or out of this area, you would see footprints. And in the picture, you don't see anything. You just see these rings.
Yeah.
And some people suggested that it could be something in the ground, something with, I don't know, the magnetic.
Fungus,
something.
I think.
Yeah,
somebody
fungus. Something with using a lawnmower and different patterns around the tree that affects the ground a certain way.
Mm.
But the experts from the, I forget what the organization was, it's some official tree organization, and they had no idea what would cause it.
Yeah. So, I mean, if they've looked into it, you would think they'd be able to determine pretty quickly, being people that are familiar with trees and stuff and grass.
Right. I mean, in that area, you would think that if there's some fungus-related thing, that it would not just affect this one area or that they had seen it before. And you would also think that in an area of trees, if there is grass under that snow, that similar mowing had been done in other areas,
right,
and they would see that somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they hadn't seen this before, it makes it really strange.
Yeah, and this is the first time I've ever seen anything like that.
Yeah.
You know, I guess, you know what I ought to do, because I talk with Nancy Talbot sometimes, and I should send her the pictures and see if she's seen that before.
That's a great idea.
Because it is really interesting, and she's worked with snow circles that they believe are legitimate in Holland, so it looks very strange, very cool looking, very pretty either way.
Here's a sort of an update to a story we talked about last week, and that is the multiple videos of alleged UFO in Jerusalem. The debate over the authenticity of various videos of the alleged UFO in Jerusalem continued last week and into this week, and were even amplified by the release of even more videos. There is so much controversy surrounding the videos. Some believe that multiple videos support the likelihood that the UFO incident is genuine, while others have pointed out several issues with the videos themselves that indicate a hoax. The Jerusalem Post even published an article today titled, "Close Encounters of the Fabricated Kind."
Yeah, this one is because we posted today AOL News story where he goes over the pros about how he thinks these are probably real, and it's very, you know, it makes you think. And then we posted the Jerusalem story, which seems to, they believe they've discovered that it definitely is a hoax, which is also, you know, pretty convincing. And it's hard to, I'm still kind of on the fence. I'm kind of leaning towards the hoax side right now, but it's good to keep an eye on this, and hopefully people will keep discovering more.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to make of it. I'm leaning more towards the hoax as well. You know, when the first two videos initially came out, you know, that had me thinking, because you see these two people. You see the guy in front of the first camera, mm-hmm. and then you see the vantage point from his camera, too. So you've got these two cameras, supposedly the same time, same incident. But then these other videos started coming out, and one that was posted late last week, a group of young adults in a car driving down the road, and there's like 6 minutes of just a video camera in a car recording nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are some strange cuts, and then all of a sudden they just happen to be at a overlook, a lookout point over the city, and this guy's staring at the UFO, and then it cuts, and then they're showing similar footage to what's in the other videos. So.
Yeah, definitely felt very set up,
yeah.
That video. It's cool, though, that the Jerusalem Post is on this, and I hope they keep pursuing it, because usually cases like this, I think often we see that get a lot of attention and some investigation goes on, especially people who have access to the witnesses are in the same area. Then they're able to get a hold of these people, and these people will then try to continue to perpetrate it. But often people who stay kind of hidden like this, once they get found, they're like, oh, okay, you know, I give up. You got me. So we'll see what happens.
Well, it's cool to read the perspective from the Jerusalem Post mm-hmm. on this, because they're right in it.
Yeah.
And they're a pretty major paper, yeah. At least according to Antonio Huneas.
Yeah, Antonio said they're famous. You guys hadn't heard of them? And maybe if I was in Jerusalem.
Yeah, I don't frequently visit there. But according to Antonio, it's a huge paper.
He said in New York they used to see the paper out there all the time.
Wow.
That they used to carry it out there.
Well, I used to live in New York and I didn't see it, but I probably wasn't looking for it. So.
Yeah. You were just looking for your next meal out there living on the street. Practically.
That, trying not to die of the cold.
Yeah. Oh, and we shouldn't brag about how it's like
70 degrees
oh, and yeah. Sunny and beautiful outside here.
Oh, yeah. People are going to come out for the UFO Congress and they're not going to leave.
I know. This is just, I've definitely fallen in love with this weather, people. And so those of you out there dealing with the snow in February and March, at least in Colorado, is the worst snow month. So it kind of would increase. And
well, and I know people probably don't believe us, but there is a swimming pool at the hotel for the Congress.
Right.
We're going to be in the swimming pool. We're even going to have live music out by the pool. Pool party in February. I know it's a strange concept to people,
mm-hmm.
but they're going to love it.
Yep. Pool party at the Congress. Be there.
Swimming pool in February.
Square.
And then they're going to call up all of their friends and family back home and go, guess where I am? I'm in the pool.
I'm in the pool, sucka.
Yep.
Well, guess where I am? Shoveling snow. Well, speaking of Nancy Talbot, she's talking about she was shoveling snow off of her car every day. She gave up, parked her car at a friend's house, and it stayed there because she's just letting her friend give her a ride when they need to go to the store or something. But
yeah, see, that's no good.
Thing terrible.
Yeah, that's no good.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have snow here.
Yeah.
I don't need it.
Yeah, I don't miss it.
Here's sort of a...
not even when we see pretty snow rings, like in that picture.
Well, they're fun in a picture.
Yeah.
That's good for me. I'll see the pictures.
Yep.
I don't need to be in it. No shoveling my car.
Mm-hmm. Although one day I'd like to peg you in the head with a snowball. I'm going to get you.
I'm sure that'll happen at some point.
You better be careful next time we go and investigate somewhere with some snow.
Well, we'll be in Colorado next month.
Yeah.
So
oh.
If there's still snow.
That's right. There
yeah.
will be.
Yeah. We'll be in Colorado, and there might be some snow left over for us.
It's on.
This was some drama-filled news from last week, but on January 28th, Stephen Bassett, Executive Director for the Paradigm Research Group, delivered a presentation in Santa Monica, California, about the latest developments in the world of UFOs, extraterrestrials, and exopolitics. Bassett delivered a second presentation in Santa Monica on February 4th, and Michael Horn, the U.S. media representative for Swiss UFO contactee Billy Meyer, announced last week that he would be in attendance to examine Bassett's evidence. But apparently, Horn introduced evidence of his own at the February 4th event, evidence he allegedly offered to contribute to a joint effort between he and Bassett to stop the truth embargo about actual extraterrestrials and their UFOs. Horn claims he has kept information secret for more than a year, but he is now ready to share the information. This evidence is apparently tens of thousands of pages of information related to the Meyer case.
Yeah, I was curious because he said he released some mind-blowing information at this conference or this talk, but it didn't really make sense as to what that information was, something that proved that someone was going to hoax something against Billy Meyer, but he wasn't clear who that person was.
Right, and that's the reason he gave for holding this information back, but he feels that it's now safe to release it, and they're not going to attack Billy Meyer anymore. And this apparently is all information that came to him from the Plagiarans. But I don't know, and it's interesting, because I'll have to check in with our friend over in Santa Monica, Jeremy Corbell. He was actually present at both events,
right.
I believe. So I'll hear more from him. I haven't read too much information about what actually took place. But I thought the first...
in the chat saying he's going to talk to Horn soon.
Excellent. So, the first event, you know, the announcement from Bassett was that he was going to announce all this information that proves extraterrestrials and things. But then I guess it wasn't so earth-shattering, and Horn kind of called him out on that. Saying, well, he's going to come back, and during the Q&A, I'm going to get in his face and make him prove this. So there was all this drama that there was going to be a throwdown between Michael Horn and Stephen Bassett. But now, apparently, they've come together, and they're going to work towards a common good.
Like a wrestle? They're going to wrestle?
I don't think it was planned, but I would pay money to see that.
UFO Wrestling Federation.
Yes, they do that in Spain, from what I've been told.
Really? Well, I love to tell my favorite Michael Horn story, which was, you know, I met him a couple of years ago at the UFO Congress, and he was showing his movie, which I liked, and he sat next to me during the screening, and I was surprised because he was actually a nice guy, and we talked, and he seemed so nice and everything. It wasn't too long after that he sent a message to all of the MUFON people when I was doing the MUFON thing, and that you guys are a bunch of idiots and you guys don't know what you're talking about and why do you ignore Billy Meyer, which most MUFON people don't ignore, or a lot of MUFON people don't ignore Billy Meyer. Of course, there's people are very heated over the Billy Meyer thing. But regardless, it's some people, you know, his whole point was you guys should have me talk. And so I emailed him. I said, well, if you want people to have you talk, you should say, I have some incredible information that you guys will want to see, and I'd love to share it with you, instead of calling him an idiot right off the bat. And he replied and said, I'm just not diplomatic in the way I do things. I've always had a problem that way. But I think it is just, you know, his approach that makes things so difficult. I think he would have a lot more success if he wasn't so aggressive or at least combative when he approaches these things. So, because I know there's a lot of people, you know, to some people don't like this, but there are a lot of people that like Billy Meyer and his case out there who want to hear more. But I know it rubs them the wrong way because, you know, even the Billy Meyer messages are kind of real, you know, happy, lovey, hippie type stuff, you know, which I love that kind of, you know, peace and love stuff. But when you're aggressive, you know, you kind of turn those people off and scare them away.
Groovy.
Groovy. So I think, you know, I hope that he calms down a little bit and helps his own cause with working with people.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned Billy Meyer. It was kind of funny. We had a very energetic person email us today, really anxious and wanted to know why we hadn't posted any updates about the meeting, the U.S. visit of Billy Meyer and his interaction with Stephen Bassett. And I felt bad breaking his heart, but I had to let him know that it was actually Michael Horn, his representative, not actually Billy Meyer visiting.
Yeah.
I let him down a little bit. He understood.
Maybe he felt better because he couldn't make it to the event, whereas he would have liked to have made it if...
That's true. It probably did make it better for him.
He was like, great. Yeah. I thought I missed something incredible. Thanks, man.
He's probably angry all day pulling out his hair. I missed Billy Meyer.
Yeah. Freaking out. So, yeah, it's interesting. I wish I could understand what Michael Horn is even saying a little better. Of course, I know Stephen Bassett, and Stephen Bassett actually is a pretty nice guy, too, so I hope he wasn't too aggressive with him, but you know, it doesn't hurt to have a little bit of constructive debate going on.
Well, I'll be really excited to hear what this evidence is and what he has to say, because he made a bold statement that was something like the UFO secret is now over or something.
Yeah.
So...
But he's into bold statements.
Yeah.
So is Bassett, so.
I like bold statements.
Yeah. Well, make one.
Alejandro is the greatest radio host ever.
That's a very bold statement, my friend, and I like it too.
I don't know that I believe it, but that's a bold statement, and I made it.
That's the problem. It's better when you have a bold statement and you believe it. Love is the way. I just put a love sticker on my car. I believe that so much. Well, I don't care how cheesy that is. I may not look like a hippie, but it lets people know there's a hippie behind the wheel, buddy. So if you put on your blinker, this guy's probably going to let you in.
That's groovy, Alejandro.
Thanks, man.
You know who I learned that from?
What?
One of our speakers at the UFO Congress.
That's right, the groovy Mr. Daniel Sheehan.
Yeah. Good old Danny Sheehan.
Mm-hmm.
He's full of groovies.
Yeah. And he's got such an impressive background, too.
That's right.
It's
he was at my wedding.
Groovy.
That's all you need to have
right.
to be an impressive background to have been at my wedding. So.
Speaking of impressive, I think the listeners will be impressed to hear that Jason had Daniel Sheehan and Jaime Musan at his wedding. Talk about a UFO, dude.
And that was before I was a UFO dude.
Uh-huh. Before you were doing UFO news.
I knew who they were, and I had certainly met Jaime before, but not Danny Sheehan. And the wedding is over, and it's sort of the reception time. And I turn around, and I see these two people that I had to take a second to place because they were so... out of place. I didn't recognize them as people who should be there. And I was all, wait a second, that's Jaime and Danny. It was an odd moment.
Mm-hmm.
But then it was great. They drank all my alcohol and had a great time.
Good, yeah. And Daniel Sheehan, and this is great. I can ask you about this because I don't think I've asked you. I know during the reception or at some point, Daniel Sheehan spoke up, which probably was at least a little embarrassing for you, and said, who here believes in UFOs? How did that go over?
I was pleasantly intoxicated at that time.
So you don't remember? Or
I think I do, but it didn't bother me.
Yeah, everything was a good time then.
And it was kind of loud. I don't think anybody heard anyway. So.
Yeah. How
they just said, who's that drunk?
Yeah, who's that drunk guy talking about UFOs? That's funny. So that's pretty neat, though. And Daniel Sheehan will be speaking at the Congress. Jaime Musan will not this year, but... this is the first time I've announced this or said anything
That's
about
right.
it. Saturday at lunch during the conference, Jaime is supposed to have. He said, he called me, he says, Alejandro, you must Skype me in on Saturday. You must Skype. I have something important to say. That's my Jaime Musan impression.
So very good.
We're going to Skype him during lunch, and he says he's going to come on and tell us something important. So hopefully if everything works okay, we'll have a special news bulletin from Jaime Musan via Skype.
Pretty high tech, pretty awesome.
That's really cool. Skype is awesome where you can get people from all over the world live on your computer screen talking to them, looking at their picture.
Yeah, it's too bad that we weren't able to get Jaime scheduled to work with the conference this year, but this is the next best thing.
Mm-hmm.
Skype with Jaime.
Yeah. So we'll get the latest and the greatest from Jaime, people. Yep, Justin in the chat says, wow, with an exclamation mark.
It deserves an exclamation mark.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool.
I think it is, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's it for the news, Alejandro.
Okay.
All right. Be sure to check out these stories and more at openminds.tv, your source for UFO-related news. I'm Jason McClellan, your Open Minds news correspondent, and you've been briefed. Back to you, Alejandro.
All right. Thank you, Jason. Going back to openminds.tv, I want to let you in on a couple of stories that we've got out lately. In fact, just today I posted another entry for our UFO case files revealed by Michael Schrat. And in this one, he has a few cases, one in Virginia. This comes from the Wendell Stevens collections that we have here. It's a sighting report, but of course what Michael's done is gone and reproduced this thing. And it's very interesting. It's almost like a shower head with LEDs on it, on the bottom of it, this strange bell craft. Also, of course, the famous Gulf Breeze, Florida incident from 1987. If you haven't heard of that, was a famous bunch of sightings that happened in Florida for a period of time, and some very controversial pictures that were taken. Michael's kind of done his thing on these and made a diagram and an example of one of the main ships that people had seen, and photographs were taken, pictures of, which is kind of cool because this adds something new to the case where you can kind of see some details about the craft and the craft that was described in that case. And then another case in South Carolina from 1980, and interesting enough, this is kind of a dome-shaped object with a concave bottom, which is something that I've read about just recently in the Blue Book files. I was kind of reviewing the Blue Book files again, and there was other people who have seen craft similar to this, so this is kind of cool. Also, we did post some more information on the WikiLeaks. Of course, we talked about this before, but what I decided to do is kind of put it all together in a story so you would know everything that we know so far. And I've gotten all of my information really from Grant Cameron on this of presidentialufo.com. Anyways, I had talked about how a paper in Norway called the Aftenposten had posted a bunch of stories about some WikiLeaks. They had actually gotten a hold of the over 250,000 WikiLeaks cables and released a few more that referred to UFOs, one of them being a Belarusian KGB chairman who had been asked why they don't investigate paranormal, such as UFOs and stuff like that. And he pretty much just said, we don't have the resources to do so or the means to do so anymore. This was a kind of a funny one, an Ecuadorian committee that was tasked with drafting a constitution, and there were people criticizing that this committee was spending too much time with constituents, different sort of lobbying organizations, such as meeting with UFO believers. So they were upset that they should have been spending more time drafting the constitution. Of course, these people felt like they wanted to get feedback from the public before doing so. They also noted the Raelians, and Jason, who was just on, posted a story with a little video with Assange, Julian Assange, who started WikiLeaks, talking about the UFO WikiLeaks and pretty much saying just what this story says is that there's not much there except for some weird cult groups like the Raelians and some of the notes on some of the news they made over the years. In particular, this one was when they said they were going to clone a human being. Also, there's a quote from the cabinet or chief cabinet secretary, Nobutaka Machimura, who essentially was commenting on his government saying, that they didn't take much stock in UFOs, and him saying he did not agree with that perspective, and he thinks that they are important and should be investigated. Also, this is kind of an interesting one, too, that I kind of looked over, and I don't think I talked about this one. But a French abductee who was an author made a lot of news when he wrote in his book that he was going to predict a tsunami in May of 2006. That tsunami did not happen, but the Moroccan, meteorological group made a statement that they investigated this to show that it's not going to happen. So it was interesting that they even got this office so excited this book became so popular that they even researched it. But we did find out, and this was from some stuff that Grant Cameron had sent to me, that Afton Poston really did receive the 250,000 WikiLeaks, and essentially they had a WikiLeak leak. So someone was leaking these WikiLeaks to them, and they felt that they had to get them out because they thought the WikiLeak people were kind of overseeing the release, and they didn't like that. Although The Guardian, who has also had these files, said, no, we've been releasing them, you know, at will. Nobody's told us when or to release these things. So some confusion there over, you know, where they, Afton Poston got these WikiLeaks, but Assange and The Guardian and others have confirmed that. Indeed, these are real WikiLeaks. So according to Assange, according to Afton Poston, now that there aren't much out there regarding UFOs, really what I've just gone over with you is about that all that they have. But then again, we had read a story from The Guardian like a month ago where The Guardian said there were no UFO files beyond the mention of Gary McKinnon, and then these come out. So are there more out there that we are not aware of? That would be interesting, and let's hope that there is something more interesting out there. Of course, these are cables that weren't that secret. They were cables that go back and forth in between embassies and pretty much anybody that could get into this area, including, I guess, any military service person can go in and get a hold of these cables. So they weren't that secret, but some of what they've said certainly has embarrassed the American government and others. And then I think I already told you last week about a Korean UFO researcher, and we had gotten a hold of him, and he had sent us a couple of his personal UFO pictures, which is kind of exciting, and we posted those. He didn't give us a whole bunch of information behind them, just that he took them himself, the first one being a picture that looks a lot like some of Jose Escamilla's rod pictures, or although it's straight, it looks more similar. Antonio Huneas, our fellow Open Minds writer, had pointed out to a picture taken in the San Luis Valley of Colorado by Tim Edwards in Salida, Colorado, kind of this long cigar-shaped type of craft. And the Salida footage had made a lot of news because it had been analyzed, and all the analysis came back that it was some gigantic craft in the sky. He also sent us another picture of where they had seen another cylindrical object and then a separate object that was glowing, and that they had videotaped it, and he sent us a screenshot of that. So a very nice man, Zhang Han Xiao is his name. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but I hope I am. We need some practice, you know, listening to Jason. We could probably use some practice in getting our Asian names and pronunciation down a little better, but of course, we don't have a lot of experience with that, but we'll work on it. That's my pledge to you. But there's some very interesting pictures that have been posted that you'll want to check out, and we're very happy to now have a relationship with this gentleman. And then, of course, Jason had also written a story about all of the Super Bowl ET ads, and I didn't watch the Super Bowl. I know Jason did, and probably many of you all did. But a lot of the UFO movies or alien movies coming out had UFO references or showed their UFO trailers. Of course, UFO movies are often going to have UFO references. But other commercials also had UFO references, such as Kia and Volkswagen. So I didn't see some of that. But it looks like our extraterrestrial friends, real or imagined, did have some representation at the Super Bowl, for better or worse, all marketing scams. So there's some of the news out there, just to get you guys all caught up on everything going on. And I also wanted to talk about a couple of our sponsors that are out there. We have gotten a couple of sponsors for the Congress. One of them is Janine London, an author. And then I think the tour, oh, yeah, this is kind of cool. We have our UFO tours going on coming up here. We have the Skywatch that we're doing on Friday night at the conference. And now it's been confirmed that we do have some people who are coming who do some Skywatching type tours. They're bringing their Hummer loaded with night vision goggles. So we're going to have tons of night vision goggles, everything enough for everybody to check out. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And then we also have, of course, I told you about this last week, a UFO tour package worth $3,000 or $4,000 that you guys are going to be able to win, those of you who come to the conference. The one lucky enough to win this package. But, of course, entry will need you to come to the conference in order to win it. That's what I'm trying to say. Let us move on to our guest, Bob Dean. I'm very excited to have him on the show. We haven't had him, even though he's local and he's a great guy. He's a lot of fun and certainly some interesting things to say, as we talked about with the NATO UFO assessment. So let's hear this from the man himself. Roll the tape.
Let's start off with, your friendship with Wendell Stevens. And you met Wendell prior to your UFO.
I had been a member of APRO for some years.
Okay.
Before I retired.
Having been a longtime member of APRO and in this field for so long, how would you define Wendell's significance in this field?
The fact that he's gone now, he's left a big gap. He brought a lifetime of experience to his work, and he had an ability, he had a skill. And as I said, he spoke Spanish fluently. He was fairly good at Portuguese, too. But I respected him, I admired him, and most of all, I found him to be a good friend. I could depend on him, and he learned to depend on me.
I don't think we've asked you this yet, but we're going to be giving him a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Congress that we would love for you to accept for him.
I'd be honored. I had planned to say a few words on my own behalf when I have my presentation. You see, Wendell, I was honored and privileged to assist him in putting together the first World Conference in Tucson in 1991. We even had a KGB agent show up. And that's a story that I don't know whether it's ever been told or not.
I know a little bit about that from Antonio, because he was there.
Yeah, Antonio was there, but there was a Russian investigator by the name of Valery Uvarov. And I hope Valery is still alive and well. I haven't seen him for a while. But Valery was there as a speaker. And we learned a little bit in those days about any time a Soviet citizen traveled abroad, a conference or whatever, he was always escorted, I guess is the proper word, by a government representative. Now, they never admitted in those days who that escort was, but this particular escort was a smashing, sexy, good-looking little blonde.
Someone recognizable at a UFO conference.
Oh, she stood out like a sore thumb. She was one of the most attractive women there, you know. And the day the conference ended, he admitted who she was. She was not merely a government escort to help him, assist him. She was there to keep an eye on him. She was KGB. And Valery admitted that the last day of the conference, and a number of other European representatives who were there said, we knew it all along, you know.
Yeah, interesting. Now, with that first conference, is there something in the newer conferences that you see lacking that they had in the first conference that maybe we can work on reigniting?
Well, your word reigniting is an appropriate term because there was some fire in that first conference. It was the first attempt to do what we have been doing now for the last 20 years. But there was fire in that first conference in 91, and it ignited me.
Back in 91, where did you think this field might be in 20 years?
You know the story, I think. I kept my mouth shut from the moment I was retired in 76 till 91. I never for a moment violated my national security oath. I took that oath, swore an oath, and in those days, when you swear an oath on a cosmic top secret assignment, it's not for 10 years or for 20 years. It's for life. And when I came out and started babbling about what I had seen, what I had learned, and the top secret material that I had access to, I really didn't think I was going to be around that much longer, because in those days, they tell me now that they changed the program, but in those days, you could have a one-car accident, you could have a coronary. And the fact that they were sitting on the biggest secret in human history, which I felt they had an obligation to tell the people about. And I believe that even today. It's in my heart. I believe the government has an obligation to tell the people the truth. In 91, you asked the question, what did I think 20 years? I really didn't. I had no idea where we would be. I'll be frank with you, I didn't believe that the government would still be sitting down on top of the biggest secret in human history. But when I came out, spoke publicly in 91 with Wendell, I didn't expect to be around this much longer, really, because I thought somebody was going to erase the old part. And that's a joke, because I was told by a good friend who I served with in Southeast Asia, and he told me one time, he says, you know, you old codger, he said, they put out a contract on you some time back. You had gone from being a nuisance to be a threat. And they said, you know, Dean's going to have an accident. Dean's going to have a coronary. And they arrange those things. And he says, for some reason, somebody said, leave him the hell alone. Stay away from him, and they pulled the contract. So I'm still here. And as I said, I went from being a nuisance to being a threat, and now I apparently am an asset, because somebody, Alejandro, wants me to do what I'm doing, or I would never have gotten away with it.
You joined the Army in many years ago.
4th of April, 1950, before you were born.
And then you went off to, as you talked about earlier, fight in several wars until you found yourself at the SHAPE headquarters, Supreme Headquarters of the Allied Powers of Europe for NATO. And what were you doing there?
When I arrived in the summer of 63, my first assignment was in Operations Division. And my sub-assignment was I was assigned to the SHOC, the Supreme Headquarters Operations Center. And I was a professional soldier in those days. I played by the rules. I had a fairly good record. I had received awards from my service. I had Purple Heart, a couple of Bronze Stars. But I never really got into it in a deep way. I had not really put my heart into it. I was just curious. I knew there got to be something going on, but I didn't have any real idea about what. Well, I'm working in the war room in the summer of 64 when they completed the study. 3 years. The study was titled An Assessment. It had a subtitle of an evaluation of a possible military threat to Allied forces in Europe. You look at the front of it, that's all it could say, you know, nothing about UFOs. You turn the page, man, you couldn't shut the damn thing out. You couldn't stop. because not only the study was that thick, but it had about 10 inches of annexes and appendices, and you start going through those things, photographs. That's when it really hit me like a ton of bricks.
Mm-hmm.
Not only was this real, this was the greatest story in human history.
What kind of information was in the assessment?
Alejandro, it was a three-year military study, which was focused. Is there a threat? Because on the morning of the 2nd of February, 1961, World War III almost started, all because of a mass flyover of circular metallic objects flying in formation at a very high rate of speed, at a very high altitude, obviously under intelligent control, came out of the Soviet sector, out of the east, out of Russia, over the Warsaw Pact area, over NATO lines, and these things were high, fast, and as I say, in formation. They turned north over the channel, over the southern coast of England, and then they disappeared off of NATO radar over the Norwegian Sea. And in 61, the morning of the 2nd of February, Soviets went on red alert. We went on red alert. Everybody had their fingers above the red buttons, you know, fingers on the triggers, so to speak. It was over in about 20 minutes. Soviets thought it was those things belonged to us. For a time, we thought they belonged to the Soviets. Air Marshal Pike established a study in 61 and says, I've had enough. I want to know what's going on. They started the study, the assessment. They finished it in 3 years. They published it in the summer of 64. I'm working in the war room. I'm sitting in there one morning, about 2 in the morning. We're used to 24-hour shifts, you know, 12-hour shifts, but the war room was active 24 hours. As I said, in those days, it was difficult. It was awkward. World War III was a possible reality. But when it was published in 64, they only published 15 copies, gave a cosmic top secret clearance. Copy one went to the Secretary General of NATO. Copy two went to my boss, General Lyman Lemnitzer, who was at that time SACUR, the Supreme Allied Commander in Europe. Copy number three was placed in the vault in the war room. I'm sitting in there one morning about 1 or 2, reminiscing about it. The coffee was too black to drink. We'd read all the old magazines and all. And you heard the story about military life being 99% boredom and 1% sheer terror. Well, that was true. So I'm nodding off, and this Air Force bird colonel, who was a controller, there was always a controller in 06, either a wing commander or an Air Force colonel or a Navy captain, there was always 06 that rank level was controller. And then he had about a staff of about 8 or 10 of us who supported him. And I'm nodding off one morning, and the Air Force colonel goes to the Kim. He looks at me and he says, hey, Master Sergeant, wake up. Yes, sir, I'm sorry. I'm here. Yes. He went into the vault, a walk-in vault. Shock had a walk-in safe. Pulled this thing out, threw it on my desk and said, read that. That'll wake you up.
Do you think he handed that to you just to give you something to do, or did he want you to...
You know, looking back on it, You're looking back, was that a coincidence? Was he really... He'd looked it over himself. He'd read it. He apparently was impressed by it. He threw it on my desk and said, wake, that'll wake you up. Read that. You know, my life was saved in Korea. 3 times. My life was saved in Southeast Asia 3 or 4 times. I have beaten the odds in combat a dozen times, and I'm still here. And I'm still babbling about what I've learned and what Alejandro, I'm still learning. You know the story. I think I've shared it with you. In 2003, I made a presentation at the Bay Area Conference. And then the last presentation I was going to make, and I got up and I said, I'm finished. I'm out of here. I'm not going to do this anymore. I was fed up with the infighting, the rock throwing, the mudslinging, not from the critics, but from the members of the so-called community itself. And I was fed up. I was up to here. I said, I don't need this. I don't deserve this. I'm going to have to go back and live like a retiree, retired gentleman. My kid used to accuse me of trying to commit suicide slowly, Big cigars, still enjoy them. Good bourbon, Jack Daniels, lots of red meat.
So the assessment?
5 years with recluse.
Oh, right, right.
And I began doing serious remote viewing. And Alejandro, when you do that, there are no secrets. You go out of your body, you can extend your consciousness anywhere, literally, in the universe. As Bob Monroe said repeatedly before he died, there is a spiritual component in the human being. There's a spiritual matter that 99% of what he is. And that spiritual component, that soul, can be extended infinitely. And when you go out into the universe, there are no secrets. You can go to other planets. You can go to the moon. As Ingo Swann says, the moon is busy. We got people all over the damn place on the moon. There's people all over Mars. There's all kinds of activity. When you're a remote viewer and you really start looking at some of these things, it changes your life. You know, first of all, that you're immortal. There is no death. You're not afraid of dying. You know you live in an infinite universe filled with intelligent life. It changes your view of everything. It's changed my view of them. It's opened the doors for my relationship with them.
And eventually it changed your decision to stay away from the UFO field, and you came back.
I was told to come back. And I don't know whether we have time to go into that story or not. I was flat told to come back and start sharing what I've seen, sharing what I've learned, sharing my experiences. And I was told that one of the reasons I'm here is to help open the doors, to help open the windows, as it were, to help expand people's consciousness. Alejandro, I'm a deep believer that the survival of this species hinges on the fact that the human race has got to expand its consciousness as a species and as a race if it wants to survive. We cannot continue going down this muddy road we've been on, war after war after war. We can't keep this up. We've got some good friends in high places. We're getting some good professional help. And I'm not joking. We've been getting help from them for a long, long time. So primarily, one of the reasons I'm still doing what I'm doing, speaking at conferences, giving interviews to people like you, is that I deeply believe in my heart and soul that we have got to help expand people's consciousness into who they are and what they are, and to stop this nonsense of waging wars among ourselves. When you reach the point I have reached, you have learned that there doesn't matter what color your skin is, it doesn't matter what language you speak, it doesn't matter what church you go to. The only thing that matters is if you are a human being living a life on planet Earth during this century, and you're here for a purpose, and there is a reason for your existence, and that you are an immortal being, and the universe is infinite, and it's filled with intelligent life. And that's why I'm speaking out, and that's why I
I'm still doing what I'm doing.
One of the guests I'm really excited to see at the Congress is Paul Hillier, ex-Minister of Defense. And essentially the reason I think of that is because he's made his life purpose now something very similar. That we need to change our ways because we're just killing ourselves. So I'm really excited to meet. It'll be great. Have you met him before?
No, I haven't. I'm looking forward to meeting him. Yeah.
You guys will have to talk.
Over at San Jose here the last time you were there, I had the honor and privilege of meeting Paul LaViolette, who I consider to be one of the top astrophysicists on the planet. And I admired his work for years and years, but I had a chance to get down and chat with him a little bit. And I read a couple of his books. I bought a number of his tapes. There's another great mind.
With the assessment, you said that they were trying to assess whether there was a threat.
Yeah.
Did they find a threat was
no,
present?
No, because it was quite apparent. And it was very clear from all the evidence they collected that if they were malevolent or hostile, it would have been over a long time ago, because the advanced technology that they repeatedly demonstrated to us purposely, time after time after time, made it clear to our military leaders in NATO that if they were hostile and malevolent, the game would have been over. Now, in 1964, when they published the study, they didn't know what that was, but they had enough evidence to know that there obviously was some kind of a program underway. You've heard me say this again and again, but the government most people think they've got is not the government they really got. There is a shadow government, no question about it. And they're not made up of people who have to get elected every 2 years or every four or every six. No. We have a government, a shadow government that doesn't get elected, that is not accountable or responsible to, they don't have to account to anyone. They spend trillions of dollars of taxpayers' money, and there's no accountability of that. Some of those know. There are those who are still keeping the lid on, as it were, who know. Now, I'll tell you that I believe I know as what it's all about. I've spent, I'll be 82 next month and month from now. I've devoted 50 years of my life, Alejandro, trying to figure out what the hell is it all about. And I think I know pretty well what's going on. Now, that may sound presumptuous, you know, maybe I am being presumptuous, but I do believe I've got a pretty good handle on what the hell it's all about, because I've been told and shown things which tell me that this program is underway, has been underway for centuries, more likely millennium, and it's a program in progress.
Is there a malevolent component to...
No. None whatever. Now, there is what we'd call tough love. They don't love us necessarily. They don't despise us necessarily. They have a job to do. Some of these people, Alejandro, represent cultures and civilizations a million years ahead of us. They're here, and they've been here involved with this race on this planet for thousands of years, and the purpose of the program is literally not only to upgrade us genetically, which they've done time and time and time again. They have manipulated our genome. They have literally orchestrated major changes. Human species, the human race, what do they call us? What do we call ourselves? Homo sapiens sapiens. Well, we used to be not Homo sapiens sapiens. We were something else. But we have been genetically manipulated. We have been genetically re-engineered. We are being sociologically manipulated and engineered. And as I said, it's not so much that they care that much about us. They don't love us that much. They look upon us at the moment as primitive, savage, and dangerous, which is what one of them told the retired Navy scientist who shared that with me, who worked with a couple of them for 5 years of his life, his career. They look upon us as being primitive, savage, and dangerous.
Hmm.
And the other one piped in and said, "You also stink. you don't smell good."
Mm-hmm.
And the retired commander says, "You know, I'm somewhat offended. You know, I wondered.
Yeah.
I showered this morning." And they said, No. Humans have an aura about them. It's a nature of the species, the race. It's a nature of their diet. It's how they think. The term that was used, auric stench. There's an odor about us that is a quality of our nature.
Do you know what type of entities these were that this Navy commander was working
with? Well, the ones that were working with the commander at this government laboratory, a few miles outside of Las Vegas, and he wasn't specific of where it was, he was a plasma fusion physicist. And they had been working with him, two of them, for about 5 years until he retired. And it was when he was retiring, he said to him, he'd gotten to know them. And apparently they looked just as human as we did.
Getting into your background, so you came across the assessment and you kept quiet on it for quite some time.
Oh, till 91.
Till 91. And then you spoke about it and you started having problems to your career. You alluded to that a little earlier. What sort of issues?
Well, I had problems at my job in Tucson, the sheriff's department. His complaint was that I was involved with UFOs, you know. And my attorney just ripped him over one side and down the other. We went through 2 years of litigation after that. I finally won. I got the job. I got the back pay, $100,000 of tort damage and all that. But I was angry of that. I'd gone through the divorce. I had black helicopters hovering over my house in Tucson. I kid you not. I'm sitting in there one day reading, and I hear this whoop, 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 very distinct. You know what a helicopter sounds like, particularly when it's hovering right above you. And I mouthed a few things and threatened him, you know. And then once he knew he got my attention, gone. And I used to be followed at night with black SUVs with darkened windows, you know, and I got to the point where I could see it in the rearview mirror. And I was shadowed regularly all over the place. I was getting phone calls at 2 a.m. with gruff voices saying, "Listen, you old son of a bitch, cut, you know, your big mouth is going to get you in trouble. Keep your mouth shut. Stop talking about this and leave it alone. Get the hell away from it." And, you know, I got call after call after call. Being shadowed at night and the day, the helicopters, the phone calls, went through all that.
Did it eventually stop?
I was on the phone one time with Wendell. And he'd gone through all that garbage. Well, hell, they'd put him in prison for a couple of years. And I says, "Wendell, I've had about enough of it." I said, "You know, I pack iron. I carry a gun. I'm fed up with this." And I says to him over the phone, and I knew my phone was bugged. I says, I'm an old vet. I suffer from post-traumatic stress syndrome for 2 wars. Now, I says, I just might lose it sometime, Wendell, and pull the .45 and start shooting people. You know, these guys that have been following me, I could put about 5 rounds into that helicopter because it was right above the house, you know, and, you know, I could lose it. And no one is ever going to put me in prison because I'm an old soldier suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome, you see." And I was saying this tongue-in-cheek to Wendell over the phone. And he says, "That's true, you know." He's picking up on it. And he played back with me. He says, "That's true." He says, "You know, you could go over the edge. You could end up shooting 3 or 4 people," and said, "That would be terrible." And I said, yeah, I hate to, you know, it could happen because I have a point, Wendell. I won't be able to take this anymore. Alejandro, it all stopped. No more phone calls. No more black SUVs with darkened windows. No more helicopters. Now, whether my remark to him had any meaning or not, I don't know. But that did stop. And as I said, my friend in DIA told me later that they'd put out a contract on me because I'd gone from nuisance to threat, and they were going to just have me have an accident.
Did you expect that in 91 when you started talking that might happen?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you expect possibly worse could happen even?
Alejandro, I had seen firsthand examples of not only careers ruined, but families ruined, lives ruined. I had had contact and I had had first face-to-face exchanges with Air Force officers who had made the mistake of publicly saying what they had seen while they were up there, things that had happened to them, UFOs that had flown along beside of them. They'd look over and they'd see somebody looking in the disc, in the UFO, looking at them. And then they would talk about it when they would got back, and their lives were ruined, their careers were ruined, families were ruined. I'd seen that. And they were capable of scientists in Los Alamos said too much about some of the things he had been working on. He had a one-car accident one night going from the laboratory at Los Alamos to his home. And when the state police got to the car, they were capable of doing that in those days, and they did it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I said, they've told me, I've had friends tell me on the inside that they stopped doing that. That they have other ways of persuading you not to talk. It's usually chemical now. They don't use the brute force. It's a chemical thing now, which they can induce coronary. They can induce, you know the story of Stephen Schiff.
Mm-hmm.
He should not have died from that cancer. By the time he was diagnosed to the time he breathed his last breath was under a year. That cancer should not have killed Stephen Schiff. And he was a congressman.
Right.
But he was causing too much trouble. He was rattling their cage, rocking their boat, and they took him out.
But you, at this point, 91, had become so frustrated with the secrecy and that the government hadn't shared what you knew they knew for nearly 30 years that you decided to talk anyway.
Yeah, people have said, oh, that showed courage. And I said, no, it didn't show courage. It showed anger. You know, I'm a retired command sergeant major. We're not famous. We're not noted for patience or genteel ways of doing things. The reason the generals love command sergeant majors is that we would get things done. Well, I was to a point where my anger was up. I got my dander up, as mm-hmm. the saying goes. I was pissed off. And I didn't care whether they were going to take me out or not. And mm-hmm. I was going to tell what I had seen, what I had learned, and what people needed to know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was willing to, you know, go out with a flesh.
Did you think the government perhaps was going to do that themselves, maybe when you were going through the 60s and 70s or 80s?
Yeah, I did. I mm-hmm. did. Until it became clear to me, and I've been told that this by people, that once I went public, once I sued the sheriff and won, I was on hard copy. That embarrassed Pima County. That embarrassed Clarence Dupney, who's still down there as sheriff, by the way. I was in the National Enquirer three times. I think going public, Alejandro, was one of the things that saved my ass.
Hmm.
I think really the one of the things that kept me alive is that, first of all, I went public. I laid out what I had seen, what I had experienced, and I only laid out a little bit of it then. But I think going public is probably what saved me. Because if they had taken me out and bumped me off after I had blah, blah, blabbed all over the damn place, people would have started asking questions. Hey, could it be that what he was telling us is true?
Right.
You know?
But now you do not feel that disclosure is coming from the government anytime soon.
No, because I've been flatly told that I am an asset. That somebody or somewhere wants me to do what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know some of them do because I'm part of this program now. It's a form of disclosure known as subliminal education. Now, the cynics in the businesses, in the government, call it psychotronic persuasion. You know, that they use it just... They can make people buy anything they want. People can be persuaded to do anything they want most people to do. All you have to do is watch TV regularly or use the net, the web, regularly, and you end up eventually... You pay your taxes, you don't misbehave, you go to the ball games, you attend NASCAR, you do all the things that they've designed for you to do to keep you busy and to keep you from thinking. One of the things that gets my dander up and gets me angry is I say, Jesus, people, for God's sake, wake up. Stop being a clam. Stop playing their stupid game. I can't watch TV anymore. It makes me sick to my stomach. You know, I get on there and I surf, desperately looking for something worth watching, you know? I have a few moments. Maybe there'll be something. The History Channel, perhaps. But they're not to be trusted anymore because now they've got, you know, they're making a whole damn program out of us. Swap meets. They've got what a Las Vegas, a pawn shop. They got a whole program on pawn shop in Las Vegas. Oh, he's still my heart.
Yeah.
How exciting, you know, mm-hmm. watching a damn pawn shop. Well, forgive me.
Yeah.
You know, my dander was rising there, but I apologize to you because I get so pissed at this
mm-hmm.
because the masses. Allow them to manipulate. And I say to people, damn it, wake up. Use your head. Keep the TV away from your kids, or you're going to turn them into little radishes and parsnips.
Over the decades, have you seen that change much? Always the
Alejandro,
same.
I've seen it getting worse.
Mm.
Now, our society is to a point where it is becoming fragmented and there are different levels. Now, there are people in this society that are incredibly bright who are thinking and are paying attention. And then there are other people who don't even want to think. It's too painful. They've either lost their job or they're worried about losing the job, or maybe their house. You know, they may have lost their house. I look at the masses out there and my heart breaks sometimes because I see good, decent people being used and manipulated. And there are so many of them out there who have no options. They have no freedoms. They're just playing the game. They're trying to get by. They're trying to pay the bills. Keep the job, keep the kid in school.
So is their program working?
Well, their program is working, but one of the things I've criticized them about is that it's taking so long. I'll be 82 next month, you know, so to speak. That's nothing. They see our lives. They see our society. They see our planet. And they see the human race from a different perspective than we do. Where I get angry and I get short-tempered and heartbroken about what's happening, they take a bigger picture. They have a broader view. And now I understand why. Because some of them live incredibly long lives. Now that's another thing that you cannot go out and tell, what do we call it, Joe Sixpack? Mm-hmm. You know, the guy in the street. He comes here, he incarnates on this planet, he lives a life. He struggles from the day he gets out of the crib until he draws his last breath. He struggles to survive. That's why the Brookings report was so damned accurate. That's why it was so real. It's why I'm going to speak next month on why disclosure is not going to take place anytime soon. And I'm going to use the Brookings report as a classic example. Because I've had firsthand experience, Alejandro, with some of them. And I have learned that you cannot compare us with them yet. We're not ready. We can't deal with it. We can't handle it. Mm-hmm. How do you say to someone who's growing old and falling apart physically, like I am? My knees are going, my hearing is going, my eyes are now going. How do you say to me that you really don't have to go through any of that? You chose to come here. You chose to incarnate here and live a life here. Comparing our lives here on planet Earth and what we're going through with war after war after war, economic disasters, you can't compare us with them, because if we here in mass were to learn the reality of their lives and the world that they live in, it would crush us so much that we would lose a spark. They manipulate matter and they manipulate time. Now, you don't go out and tell the masses of people these things. First of all, they'll think you're out of your mind. You think you're nuts, which is maybe, you know, it's easy for them. You know, oh, he's crazy. He's gone over the edge. Don't pay attention. Your heart's lost it. Fine. If that makes them comfortable, fine. It doesn't make me comfortable, because I'm beyond being comfortable anymore. So now you've gotten a little taste, I think. I hope. And I've shared this with you affectionately, because I have respect for you. I admire who you are and what you do. But it's not the sort of thing that you go out and share with the world, because the world ain't ready for that. One of my favorite astrophysicists, quantum physicist, Amit Goswami, brilliant man, Oregon State, one of the top astrophysicists on the planet, was on Coast to Coast the other night. I had to admire him. He's written several books that are outstanding. Even poor Amit Goswami said to George Murray, when he asked him, he says, "You think we're being visited by people from other planets and other stars?" And he says, "No, I don't. Because, you know, the distances are so vast out there. They can't get here from there, and we can't go there from here." And this is one of my heroes, one of the top astrophysicists on the planet. Yeah. And he can't deal with it. He can't deal with the reality that they're here, that they've been here for several thousands of years, and that they can manipulate matter and time. Poor old Amit is not ready for that.
Mm-hmm.
Michio Kaku is not ready for that. And you know who he is.
He says he's open to the idea, and that he does think there might be some credence to that.
He's a brilliant man. Have respect for him.
Mm-hmm. I asked him about the SETI folks, and I asked him this very question, that they say they're too far from here. And he said, well, what do they know? They're astronomers, not physicists. Well, thank you very much for being on the show.
Alejandro, it's been my pleasure. Thank you for inviting.
It's always a great pleasure to have you on.
Well, looking forward to seeing you at the conference.
Yes, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, thank you for listening. Next week, we have Ben Hansen from Sci-Fi's Fact or Fake. We're out of time. Talk to you next week. Thanks for listening to Open Minds Radio.